All right, good morning. Okay, just so you should know, by purpose of information, the rest of the world is finishing the ninth parak of Chulin. We're special, so we're not going to finish the ninth parak of Chulin, but we'll be somewhere in striking range, so that by tomorrow we should finish the ninth parak of Chulin. At least that's the plan. I've had many plans before. We learned the Mishnah yesterday in Kuch Vav Amud Beis, one of the more fascinating Mishnayos in Chulin, that discuss our rodent, our special rodent, organic and inorganic. It's half and half. And the Mishnah says that, brings down a machlokas tanaim, what happens if you make contact with this sheretz. So obviously, in other words, one of the assumptions going into this whole discussion is that whatever this creature is, it's one of the shmona shvatim. It's got to be one of the eight, you know, rodents. Because I say rodents, by the way, I'm not giving... In general, you know, when we talk about a shratzim, there's no good definition for a sheretz, right? Crawling, creepy thing, crawly thing, right? Basically, sheretz is anything which is close to the earth. So, you know, included in this, in your shmona shratzim, we have toads, you have hedgehogs, you have moles, you have slugs. So, you know, in other words, in the way we organize our animals, there's no real good, broader definition for this. The Torah just simply refers to it as shratzim. That's fine. So in the discussion of our half creature, our half and half, so the Mishnah says that according to the Tanakhama, if you touch the bus, you'll be tameh, but if you touch the inorganic portion of it, you'll be tahor. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, you'll be tameh if you touch both. And then the Gemara made a qualifying statement to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, that's only if the organic and the inorganic sections of the animal run along side by side one another. Okay, I mentioned yesterday the Rambam. The Rambam has difficulty with this Mishnah. Obviously, he's a rationalist. He's a scientist. So the Rambam says that I did receive eyewitness reports on this matter, but he says the whole thing to me is inexplicable. The other major source that discusses this Mishnah is the Tiferes Yisrael. You should know, by the way, in terms of Talmidei Chachamim in our great lineage, he's by far and away one of the more interesting people that you'll meet. Tiferes Yisrael, Rav Yisrael Lifshitz. He writes a commentary to the Mishnayos. It's known more popularly by the terms Yachin Boaz. Right? If you ever get a bar mitzvah gift or you give a bar mitzvah gift, so you give Mishnayos, which is traditionally, I mean, nowadays Kahati becomes much more popular, but the Yachin Boaz used to be the standard in terms of what the Mishnayos were. That was a commentary by Rav Yisrael Lifshitz. So he I don't know him that intimately, he quotes often scientific sources in terms of explaining Mishnayos. Okay. Yeah, to a certain degree. Yeah, to a certain degree. He's so interesting. So anyway, That's so correct. Anyway, so he again, Rabbi Kornfeld quotes him as well. On his Daf insights, and again, also Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz quotes scientists who do try to support this creature. Okay, again, this is all, you know, I'm not coming here to, you know, to reinvent the wheel. It's a difficult topic. What can I tell you? Okay, the Kuf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. We're right now right in the middle of the page. Where's a good starting point? Sorry. All right, let me just start back because we'll start on the bottom of Kuch Chavav Amud Beis. We'll go through this quickly. We went through this yesterday. Tana Rabbanan. We start at the beginning of the Braisa. Okay, six lines from the bottom of the page on Kuch Chavav Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan mitoch shenemar achbar shameni afilo achbar shebiyam. Now achbar, so could indicate that even one that is from the ocean, okay? Shishmo Akbar. Apparently there was some sea creature back then that was basically a fish, and it went by the name Akbar. Is that also included as one of the shratzim? So Vidinu. Tima b'chulda v'tima b'akbar. Machulda min agdal ha'aretz, afakbar min agdal ha'aretz. So one argument is, well, the chulda is only a land creature. The Gemara will discuss that in more detail later on. Chulda is only a land creature. So if chulda is only a land creature, Akbar can only be the land creature, not the ocean creature. The Gemara says you can make another argument, which is well, by chulda, it's basically any and all animals that are called chulda. Now, it happens to be that all of them are on the land. But the point is that when the Torah says chulda, it means any animal that goes by the name chulda. Good. So, and if that's true, achbar, same story. Any animal named by that goes by the name achbar, even if it's the ocean achbar. I feel achbar should be yam, shishma achbar, tamalamar, ala aretz. So that's what the pasuk comes in Pasha Shmini to tell us. No, these shrapsim are land creatures, not ocean creatures. So the Brisa says, okay, so if I have a chulda or an achbar that happened to take a little dip in the lake, so and then it dies in the lake, so maybe shouldn't give off tumah while it's in the lake. So tamalamar hasharetz kol makom shesharetz. So on the other hand, it says hasharetz, which means wherever it may be, it's going to give off tumah. So kol makom shesharetz. So ainu ella hasharetz kol hamashritz yitma shein mashritz lo yitma arz achbar shechatsi basa vechatsi adama shein parav rava. Maybe Hishritz is coming to tell us another halacha, which is that it has to regenerate or procreate the way that animals normally procreate, and that would be sexual reproduction. And if that's true, so that would then leave out our half and half, our animal which is organic and inorganic, which does not reproduce normally, but it's spontaneous generation. And again, we'll go back to that discussion. We won't discuss it. But in other words, but you understand, though, that the Gemara is right now entertaining that this creature that we're discussing, our half and half, is something which kind of just comes, sprouts right out of the ground. So the Gemara says, and we know, and by the way, in other words, we're not going to accept this argument because we know such an animal does give off tumah, says so in our Mishnah. And I mean, that's, I'm not sure if that's an argument, meaning even before the Mishnah, it was assumed that this animal is going to give off tuma. So oti achbar shechetzi basa vechetzi adama shem parav rava v'dinu time bechulda v'time b'achbar machulda koshesh machulda av achbar koshesh machbar. On the other hand, the Gemara says, look, when that animal appears, okay, what do we call it? We call it the achbar. So therefore, it should be tummy. Av achbar shechetzi basa vechetzi adama uklach lederech zu machulda parav rava av achbar parav rava. On the other hand, it doesn't reproduce like animals normally reproduce. It's spontaneous generation. So Tamalam Rabba Sheretz. So the Gemara says Basheretz, Rashi points out. That's an extra pasuk that comes to teach us that all shratzim, even the ones that sprout out from the ground. So Amalei Ahumad Rabban LaRava. Adkan, that's the end of the Braisa. Good. So the Braisa's conclusions are basically like as follows. It has to be a land creature, can't be an ocean creature. If the Sheretz dies, it's going to give off tumah regardless of where it is. And point number three of the Braisa is that even your half and half, even your achbar, that's a composite of organic and inorganic material, which the Gemara sounds like it's saying it spontaneously generates. Even that animal is going to give off tumah. Why? Because we call it the achbar. It is the achbar. So the Gemara says now, commenting on this Braisa, you know, you have these pesukim in front of you. There are other ways to darshan the pasuk. Notably, when it says the words hashoretz, hashoretz means it sprouts. Who cares where it sprouts? I feel achbar shabiyam miyimishum ala aretz. And if it's the pasuk that al haaretz that bothers you, don't let it bother you. Al haaretz yitma yared layam lo yitma. Maybe the al haaretz comes to tell us that it only will be tamei if it comes to land. But if it doesn't come to land, it won't be tameh. So maybe that's how we could darshan the pasuk. If that would be the case, then our ocean achbar should also give off tumah. So the Gemara says, no, you can't do that, because once you opened it up for the ocean, once the achbar, the aquatic achbar is tameh, so then what difference does it make where it is? It's only going to give off tumah on the land, but not in the ocean. That makes less sense. We're not going to darshan the pesukim that way.
Doesn't the ocean purify?
Well, it's a mikvah. It's true. You know, one of the oldest expressions is, right, your tovel v'sheretz biyado, meaning if the sheretz is in your hand, it's not going to purify it, but you're going to walk out of the ocean holding the sheretz, you're still going to be tummy. So, right, you're right. What if it's somewhere in the middle? Meaning the Gemara's classification only has one or the other. Okay, I don't know. Amali hacha, amali hacha. V'hai ala artmi ba'ilei lahotzi safek tumat safek. The Gemara continues to question the Braisa. And the Gemara says,
al ha'aretz, well, isn't that coming to exclude tumat safa? What does that mean, tumat safa? So Rashi explains like this. Rashi is below where we are in the Gemara. Rashi writes, tumat safa, sheretz meis saf al ha'mayim. Okay, let's say you have a sheretz and it's dead and it's kind of floating on the water. And you're swimming alongside it. Again, let's assume it's a land sheretz. And you don't know if you touched it or if you didn't touch it. Rashi continues to write. Safek naga, safek lo naga. Af b'rishus ha'yachid sfeko tahor. So even if it's b'rishus ha'yachid, your safek is going to be tahor. Mi'chai k'ray naflam b'perek basra denazir. K'siv ha'sheretz kol makam sh'sheretz v'afilo al hamayim. U'k'siv al aretz ha'ketza kam betumas v'adai kam betumas safek. And here, if you're not sure if you touched the sheretz, so you're going to be tahor, even if it's b'rishus ha'yachid, even if it's a private domain. Remember, in the world of Tuma, we usually make a distinction between public domain, private domain. Please remember the following as well. When we say private and public domain by Tuma, we don't mean the same thing that we mean by Shabbos. Shabbos, we mean actual, private domain means actual enclosed area, four walls, okay? That is Rishus HaYachid by Shabbos. By Tuma, private just simply means no one else is around. Normally, we say by Tuma, Safek Tuma, Rishus HaYachid is Tamei. Sheretz is different. Why Sheretz is different? I'll just simply say Gzeres HaKasav, as I don't have a better explanation for the time being. So Tarte al Aretz, Tzivus of the Gemara says, you're right, that halacha is correct, and we do darshan it out. Go back and look over the psukim, you'll see the word al Haaretz twice. One is to tell me that it's only the land animals, not the ocean creatures, not your ocean shiratzim, meaning the achbar shebayam, not included. And the second al Haaretz to tell us is halacha of Safek. Ksive, okay, I'm sorry, al Haaretz ksive. Tan Rabbanan. Hatsav liminehu. Okay, one of the other Shmona Shratzim is a Tzav. In modern Hebrew, Tzav is a turtle. Do not think that in biblical Hebrew, Tzav is a turtle. I should have brought my Sefer up here. It's a toad, right? Toad. So Tzav limineo, lahavi ha'arvad, v'chein ha'nefilim v'salamandra. It comes to include these other animals as well. Okay? Arvad, Rashi just simply says, min atzavu min anachashu baki delakaman. Arvad is your crossbreed, right? A crossbreed of a toad and a snake. Okay. Does not sound like a pleasant animal. Nephilim, says Rashi. Sheretz min tzav, it's just another species of toad. Again, to get to the salamander. Salamander, says Rashi. Sheretz anotzer min ha'or. Ume atse hadas ayedek shafim. Okay, Rashi has no problem going into the metaphysical. Rashi's comfortable over there. It's not, you know, he's not a Kabbalist, to say the least. But Rashi says, do you know what your salamander is? Born out of fire, using atzei hadas, myrtle wood. And Rashi continues to say, and it's created through sorcery. Okay, yeah. Now Rashi says that because the Gemara is elsewhere describe this creature in greater detail. I think Chagiga. Okay, if anyone wants to check me up on that. Ukishahaya Rabbi Akiva Magila Pasuk Zeh Omer Ma Rabu Masech HaHashem. This is a pasuk in Tehillim. We're familiar with this pasuk. We say it on Rosh Chodesh, right? One of the longer prakim in Tehillim really punctuates davening. So the Ma Rabu Masech HaHashem Yesh Lecha Brios Gadolos B'Yam V'Yesh Lecha Brios Gadolos B'Yabasha Shebiyam. So I'm sorry. Gadolos B'Yabasha. There are sea creatures, there are land creatures. It also sounds like from Rabbi Akiva, there's no such thing as an amphibian. So, Shebiyam Amale Olos Biyabasham Miyad Mesos. Now, you know your sea creatures, they need the sea. They can't go on the land. Shebiyabasham Amale Yordosiyam Miyad Mesos. And your land creatures can't exist in the sea. Yeshcha Brios Gedolos Ba'or, Yeshcha Brios Gedolos Ba'avir. Some creatures come out of the fire, and some creatures come out of the air. Now your fire creatures can't live in the air. And your air creatures can't live in the fire. And Rabbi Kiva says, that's Marabu Masech Hashem, how great. Or if you want, by the way, I didn't see anyone say this, but I'd like to suggest it. Marabu, Rabu come from the word rov, meaning many different types. Meaning, Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't just simply make one type of animal, he made multiple types of animal needing to exist in different types of environments. Tanu Rabbanan, kol sheyesh b'yabasha yesh b'yam chutz min achulda. Every land creature has a corresponding aquatic creature. Okay, I know this will make for an excellent thesis. You want to break ground in terms of science. So you find out what corresponds. Which land animal corresponds to the. Look, I think about it. You know, there's a horse and then there's a seahorse.
Yeah, lion, sea lion.
It's a lion, sea lion, fish, catfish. Okay, there's something. There's,
but they might not be the right one.
I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just, Okay? So, Amar Rebbe Zeira, Maikra, Hazina, Kol Yoshve, I'm sorry, except for the Chuldah. Chuldah special. Chuldah is only a land animal. There's no aquatic Chuldah. Okay. I'm saying the discussion would help if I started off by knowing what the Chuldah actually is. I say rodent, I say weasel. I don't know if I'm right. Amar Rebbe Zeira Maikra Hazinu Kol Yoshve Chalad. Chalad. Another pasuk, by the way, that we say. What did we say this at the base level? Hazinu Kol Yoshve Chalad. You see from the pasuk that the Chalad Chuldah is only a land animal. Amar Avon Abreder of Yeshua. Bivare Denarish Eino Min Ayishav. The Bivare Denarish. Okay? It may be talking about a beaver. I don't know if that's correct. The words sound the same, right? Rashi simply writes, Chayus ha-mitzirins ba'oso makom bivrons balaz. So in Old French, it does sound the same. It may, in fact, refer to some beavers. So what does that mean? Eino min ha-yishuv, eino gedolos ela b'mayim. They're not land animals. They're aquatic. Amra papa bishamta narish. I'd like to put narish in cherem, right? I'd like to excommunicate the town of Narish. I don't know where Narish is. It's a town in Bavel. The Gemara will not speak nicely of this town. The Gemara will have, you did say it first.
Sorry.
It's okay, Narishkeit. So, Klamer Kol Yosher Rishayim Kulam Yu B'Shamta. I wish all of them to be in Cherem. B'Shamta Tarbe Mashche Va'Alise. This is an expression. It's a euphemism. It means the fats, the hide, together with the meat. Meaning, Rashi explains all of them. there's nobody good in Narish. Now, of course, that's an oversimplification. That's a generalization, and the Gemara makes it. The Gemara does that. Meaning, the Gemara generalizes. Yeah, absolutely. Eretz Shemidvar Hashem. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu, the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, Amar Papa, Lo Ava Narish, Shamo Dvar Hashem. Narish did not desire to listen to the word of Hashem. Okay? They're all Rishayim. Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav, Narsha, Nashkech, Manikichech. Gemara has a couple beautiful, expressions, euphemisms regarding the people of Narish. They kiss you, so you better count your teeth. Nahar Pekuda Livyach Miglim Shipir Dechaze Alach. If someone from Nahar Pekod, now Nahar Pekod, by the way, is not all bad like Narash, but still the Gemara says don't trust those people as well. If any one of them is Malave, escorts you, you know why? Glima Shapira, it's because you're wearing this nice coat. Dechaze Alach, they see that nice coat upon you. And they're going to escort you. Okay, be suspicious of those people as well. Pumpadisa'a livyach. What if somebody from Pumpadisa escorts you? Now, I thought Pumpadisa was a nice place, right? Sounds like a good place to live. That's where the yeshiva is. The yeshiva is in Pumpadisa. One of the most predominant yeshivas of Bavel was in Pumpadisa. So Pumpadisa livyach ashane ushpazech. Gemara says if someone from Pumpadisa is escorting you, you should go and change your hotel room. Meaning don't lodge with him. Rashi says they're ganavim. I'm Rav Huna Bar. Correct. I'm Rav Huna Bar Tutah Hamachas Halach Levad Vereisi Nachashu Kruch Al Hatzav. Okay, here's what I saw. Okay, we discussed the different subspecies of your tzav. One of them was the arvad. Rashi explained that that was a cross of a snake and a toad. Here the Gemara comments further on our hybrid, on our crossbreed. I saw a snake mating with a toad. Liyamim yatsa arvad mi beinehem, and out comes the arvad. Ukishabat lifnei Rabbi Shimon Achasan Amar li Amar Kosh Baruch Hu heimivir bir shlo barati baolami afani avi alehem birya shlo barati baolami. Measure for measure, mida keneged mida. Right? These people, they were violating the Isra of Kalai, meaning they crossbred a lot. And you know what? They created these weird creatures that should not have been created. So you know what I'm going to do to them? Mida keneged mida. I'm going to present to them creatures that also should not be created and are going to terrorize them. The Gemara says, as a statement of not so much halacha, but of, you know, of reality, of natural reality, that the animals that can actually cross and can actually reproduce, they have to have two similar features. Number one, their way of mating have to be the same, right? The Gemara Nida goes on to explain, right? Some animals mate belly to belly, some mate back to back, some mate front to back. And so the way of mating has to be the same. And also the gestation period has to be the same. Some animals have a gestation period of 5 months. Some animals have a gestation period of 9 months. So in order for animals to actually cross, so both their mating pattern and the gestation period have to be the same. And what happens now is that we're talking about the gestation of a snake and of a toad, and it's not the same. Apparently, the snake gestates a lot longer. Rashi over here quotes a tradition that a nachash gestates for 7 years. Okay, is that biologically true by our snakes? Probably not. Okay, but that doesn't bother me. Meaning, the nishtanu ateva, nature has gone through some metamorphosis. Okay, that's fine. Omegan lenzemiza amarav neis pesoch neis. So the Gemara, so Rav says, double nace, right? We see that term in Gemara often, right? The bara that comes down to plague Mitzrayim. Nace betoch nace, double nace. Fire inside of ice coming down. So here also, meaning when Akash Baruch Hu crosses, so Akash Baruch Hu doesn't necessarily need to follow the laws of nature. You're right. We couldn't cross a toad and a snake, but Akash Baruch Hu, of course, could. So nace betoch nace, hai purana sohu. My nace betor nech le purano. So Gemara says, usually nace is a positive thing. Here, not. It's not a positive thing. Here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates this nace betor nech in order to provide puranos. Okay. A little bit of agadata that snuck up on us in the middle of the ninth perek. Do not worry, the agadata is over. We're back to halacha.
So it was not a nice creature, the snake frog.
The snake frog was not a good creature. Gemara says, terrible creature. And but it was created to as extraction of punishment. Okay, back to the Mishnah. Okay, we're now going to submerge yourself back into the topic of Tumah Tahara, and we're going to go back to a topic which we discussed at length in the fourth parak, and that is the Avraham Adul Dal, the limb that's hanging on the animal. Okay, really, before we start the Mishnah, I mean, the principal issue that we need to follow and discover is an Avraham Adulda, this hanging limb of an animal. Animal's alive and well. Just happens to be that it suffered a terrible accident or was attacked by another animal, and the limb is just kind of hanging on. Is that limb considered attached or detached? Okay? I mean, I'm asking halachically, not biologically. Biologically, it's hanging by a thread or hanging by a bone. Is it attached or is it detached? Most, the first halacha that we're going to examine, well, not in the Mishnah, but I'm just saying, by way of introduction, is Avraham Menachai. Look, we all know the halacha is that when you tear a limb off of a live animal, that limb now is Avraham Menachai. If I tear a piece of meat off of a live animal, that's Basar Menachai. They're different, they're not exactly the same. I'll explain the difference in just a moment. And those are prohibited foods. Avraham Menachai can't be eaten by Jew, can't even be eaten by non-Jew. One of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Good. Okay. So, this limb that's hanging on, is it yet Eiver Menachai? So the answer right now is going to be no. In other words, we'll see in the Mishnah. It's not Eiver Menachai. So that means it's connected to the animal. Not so fast. Because what the Mishnah also will teach us is that while the limb is hanging on to the animal, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay? Which means that if a sheretz were to touch the limb, that limb now is going to be tame. Now, we should all be confused, right? Really confused. Because we know, as one of the first rules of Tumah Tahara, live animals do not become tame, are not sources of tumah, nor become tame. Only dead animals. Either they're a source of tumah or the subject of tumas ochlin. So if this limb that is meduldal, it's hanging onto the animal, if it's not Eiver Menachai, how can we say that it's tumas ochlin? That's weird. Right? It literally is, Danny says it beautifully, it literally is a hybrid, meaning it's going to confuse us, and I'll try to make heads and tails of this, but you understand though that that's going to be one of the basic issues in the upcoming discussion. Let's begin the Mishnah. Before we begin the Mishnah, there's one other idea that I just want everyone to be familiar with, and that is that there's a fundamental difference between Eiver Menachai, Basar Menachai. Eiver Menachai is when I rip a limb off an animal. Basar Menachai is when I just rip meat off an animal. Both are prohibited. I'm not allowed to eat either. The non-Jews are not allowed to eat either. They're different in the following. There's a couple of differences, but for our purposes, there's one major difference that everyone should be familiar with. Eiver Menachai, not only is prohibited to eat, it's an ava tumah. It's a source of tumah, just like nevela, right? In fact, sometimes the Gemara actually calls it nevela. Nevela is not really the proper terminology. It really should be called Eiver Menachai, but it's a source of tumah. Basar Menachai, prohibited to eat, but is not a source of tumah. Not a source of tumah. It's ochel, it's food. It'll be subject to tumas ochlin, which means that it'll accept tumah, but it's not a source of tumah. Okay? Major difference between Basar Menachai and Eiver Menachai. Why? No simple, no complicated explanation. Xeris HaKasav. Correct. So the Mishnah starts off right away describing either a limb or meat of an animal that's meduldal, hanging on. Rashi, nitlash mimenu ever basar gidim v'atzamos, o nitlash mimenu basar levado, v'adayin hein me'urin ba b'mitzas. It still has a little attachment to its host, right? The animal. Now, Rashi then goes on to explain what I already explained, the difference between Eiver Menachai and Basar Menachai. Eiver Menachai is a source of tumah, not Basar Menachai. The Mishnah says it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Subject to Tumas Ochlin. What the Mishnah is really telling us is twofold. Number one, the Mishnah is telling us it's not Eiver Menachai. It's not. Had it been Eiver Menachai, the Mishnah would have said so. Now, you know I'm right, because Tumas Ochlin just simply means it can accept Tumah. If it were Eiver Menachai, it would be a source of Tumah. So by the Mishnah saying that it's Tumas Ochlin, subject to Tumas Ochlin, you know it's not Eiver Menachai, which leads us to our confusion. If it's not Eiver Menachai, that means it's still attached to the animal. If it's still attached to the animal, how could it be subject to Tumas Ochlin? Okay, so Rashi kind of helps us out over here understand this. But this goes back to a point that I made earlier, right, about a week ago, and that's the following. Tumas Ochlin, in order for something to qualify as food, it doesn't necessarily mean it needs to be edible. It needs simply to be committed. As long as it's committed as food, even though it's not edible, in its current state right now, it's not edible. It's still part of an animal. It's still connected to an animal. But because it's meduldal, it's committed. Rashi says, the way Rashi says it is, look at the first words of the next Rashi. Bim koman, afa pi shehin mechubarin, im chishev alem lahachilam laove kochavim, have ochel. See what Rashi did over there? Rashi says, if your intent is to feed it to a guy, now let's be honest, right now, you can't feed it to a guy. still connected to a live animal. But in other words, it's mostly detached. It's hanging on. You committed it to food. In the world of Tuma, it's Tumas Ochlin.
But once it's Eber Menachai, it's going to be prohibited forever.
Doesn't have to become Eber Menachai. Another point, which actually Rashi makes right over here on this, on one of the bottom Rashis, it doesn't have to become Eber Menachai. Why? No, I'll explain why. Because when you shecht the animal is going to be fine, and so will that limb. That limb, you see, the starting point for the whole discussion, that limb is still considered part of the animal. Okay, now, again, it's a little nebulous, because when I shecht the mother, or not the mother, when I shecht the animal, I won't be allowed to eat that limb. But it's not Eivra Menachai, because it's still connected to the mother. Okay, so... yes. Okay? So, V'habas medonim mem hema mitam tamas ochlem mem kamam utstrichin hechsher. And it needs hechsher, meaning that like any food before it becomes tamay, needs to come into contact with this liquid, this Eivra HaMeduldal needs to come into contact with the liquid. Good. Nishchata HaBehema. Top of the next amud. If you shech the mother, I keep saying mother, because I'm in fourth parak mode. Okay, just animal. Nishchata HaBehema Huchsheru B'dameh HaDivrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says that limb is going to be mukhshar. How? Because when you shech, blood's going to come out of the neck. The blood that's going to come out of the neck is going to come into contact with the animal. The limb comes along for the ride in the world of hechsher. So now that limb now is mukhshar by virtue of the fact that you shechted it. And Rabbi Shimon Amar Lahuchshar, and Rabbi Shimon says, no, the limb is not mukhshar with the blood that you shechted it with, because he does not view limb and rest of the animal as one whole entity. We'll discuss that in much better detail as we go through the Gemara. Mesa HaBehema. What if you didn't shech this animal? So again, an animal with a limb that's meduldal, kind of hanging on, and the animal dies without the benefit of shechita. HaBasar tzarech hechsher. As far as the meat is concerned, requires hechsher. HaEver mitame mishum ever menachai ve'ina mitame mishum ever nevela. Divrei Rabbi Meir. What about that limb? We will assume, we discussed this earlier in the Masechta. Here's the Mishnah that actually says it. If the animal dies without shechita, we'll assume that immediately before death, that Eivra HaMeduldal fell off. Maybe not physically, but basically detached. Biologically. Halachically. If not physically. Okay? And so therefore, in other words, at death, our assumption is going to be that first the limb detached, right? The Gemara's terminology to describe this is misa osa nipul, that death causes detachment. It's really the other way around, meaning that we're going to assume that it detaches that limb and then the animal dies. If that's the correct sequence, what does that mean about the limb? It's Eivra Menachai. It means that limb now is going to be a source of tumah. That's exactly what Rav Meir says. So if the animal dies without the benefit of shechita, so the ha'eiver metamei mishum eiver menachai ve'ena metamei mishum eiver nevela. But it's not eiver nevela. It begs the question, what's the difference? Both are a source of tumma. The Gemara will ask that very question. Rabbi Shimon metam, Rabbi Shimon says, no, that eiver is tahor. And it seems that Rabbi Shimon disagrees with the basic premise of misa osa nipul. Again, we'll come to discuss that in just a moment. Tumas ochlin and tumas nevela lo. We turn back to the first point the Mishnah made, which is that if you have a limb that's hanging on, it's not Eivra Menachai. Okay? The Gemara over here uses the words Tumas Neveila, Lav Davka, right? With imprecision. Meaning what the Gemara simply means is, it's not Eivra Menachai, but it's a food.
Tumas Neveila, I thought it is Eivra.
That's the Gemara's way of describing Eivra Menachai.
Right, right, right.
Right, even though it doesn't say the words Eivra Menachai. Now, Hechi Dami. Now, the Gemara says, now, this limb that's hanging on, look, if this limb is going to regenerate, meaning if this limb is going to heal, so this limb is not a hanging on limb. This is just simply part and parcel of the animal. Okay? And it's not, certainly, you can't commit it as food. It's part of the animal. It's part of a live animal. And if this limb is so detached that it's basically on its way to falling off, so at this point in time, shouldn't we consider it Eiver Min Achai? The Gemara explains like this. La'olam de'ein mala naruka. No, this limb is not going to regenerate. And you're right. The limb will eventually fall off. But right now, it's considered connected to the animal. V'shani tomas nevela derechman amar ki po achi po. And as far as Eiver Min Achai, the fact that it's going to fall off, insufficient. You need it to actually fall off the animal for something to be considered Eiver Min Achai. So as long as it's still connected, it's still connected. Even though it's dead, even though it will fall off, Eiver Min Achai requires actual detachment. And here's the rub. And here's the part that really requires concentration and thought. In that, even though in the world of Eiver Min Achai, it's not, it's still connected to the mother. It's still connected to the animal. Still, it's Tumas Ochlin, meaning it's food. It's still committed as food. So again, this goes back to the point I made back in the Mishnah, which is, for Tumas Ochlin, it doesn't have to actually be edible, just as long as it's committed as food. And over here, we can commit this as food because it's Medul Dal. The Gemara makes a fascinating correlation between this halacha and Hilchos Shabbos. Watch. Te'enim shitsamku bi'ivei metam tumas ochlin. Va'atolosh mehem b'shabbos chayev chatas. Look, you have figs that dried up on the tree. Okay? Now you didn't pluck them off. They didn't fall off. The figs now are basically shriveled up. They're food. They're still edible. Dried figs. Va'atolosh mehem b'shabbos chayev chatas. Meanwhile, now, to say something's connected to the ground and is metami tumas ochlin, we will never say that. Don't say never, because here it is. But in other words, you understand what just happened? If I pluck the fig on Shabbos, I just violated the isra of tolesh. Tolesh is when I take something migidulo from where it grew. So in other words, in Hilchos Shabbos, is it connected or disconnected? It's connected. Of course it's connected. Because my detachment of it on Shabbos will result in a full liability of Tolish B'Shabbos, Malacha Shabbos. So in terms of a connection, it's connected. Is it a food? You bet it is. Since it's shriveled up, since it will fall off, it's right now committed as food, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin.
Yeah, Machmir in both ways.
Right. Correct. So, Lema Misayela. The only thing I'm going to say, just in response to like how to view it, and I'm not sure if I'm right, so I'm going off on a limb, and no pun intended. But it's fundamentally connected. Meaning, right now, if you were to ask me the question, connected or disconnected, fundamentally it's connected. It's just that in the world of Tumas Ochlin, we could view it differently. Meaning, Tumas Ochlin has a much broader definition to allow us to look at it as if it's disconnected. Okay. But fundamentally, it's connected. If I have vegetables that are dried up but still connected to the ground, right, still with the stem, with the branch, so by kruvin delas ematam tumas ochlin. Now, the Gemara over here gives two very specific examples. Cabbage and pumpkin. Now, if you cut them off and let them dry up, so they're metame tumas ochlin. Now, that, of course, makes no sense. The Gemara immediately jumps on this part of the Braisa. What do you mean dried up? It's already dry. That's the point. So Rav Yitzchak says, no. If they're right now fresh and moist, but you plan on using this pumpkin as a utensil. You know, back in the good old days, you know, their bowls, they used to use dried up pumpkin shells, right? Dried up cantaloupe shells. That were their bowls. Okay. So, Amanasli Afshan, and the point of the Braisa is that if right now they're moist, but you plan on drying them up, as long as they're actually moist, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, but, good. All we did over there is we just cleaned up the second part of the Braisa. But let's go back to the first part of the Braisa. Time of the Kruva Delas, who came in the Avshan La B'nei Achila Ninu. You see, by Kruva Delas, once they're dried, they're no longer edible. Not edible. So, of course, they're not subject to Tumas Ochlin, because they're not edible. But if I have any other fruit, while connected to the tree, it's dried but edible, it's Tumas Ochlin. Hashar Peres Metame. So, by other fruit, it gives off Tumas Ochlin. It doesn't give off Tumas Ochlin. That's not the right words. It's susceptible to Tumas Ochlin. Hechidami idi afshan hein v'ukseim pshita, ala b'lo ukseim. So the Gemara says, well, what are we talking about? We're talking about where they dried up and the ukits, and that which it's connected to also dried up, meaning basically it's no longer connected to the trees. The Gemara says, that's not a chiddush. La'olam hein v'ukseim. I'm sorry, so it must be that it's only the fruit that dried up, but meanwhile, it still pretty much has a strong attachment to its source, and yet we call it Tumas Ochlin. Proof for Shmuel. The Gemara says, not necessarily Olam Hein V'Uksem V'Kitzesan Alman Asli Yavshan Itzterechlei. Maybe we're talking about where the fruit and the stem dried up, so really it's, even though it's connected, we're going to view it as detached, and the whole purpose of the Braisa was make that second point of the Braisa. That when if I cut it off moist, but I plan on drying it, it doesn't matter, it's still subject to Tumas Ochlin as long as it's edible. Tashma, the Gemara says, how about this? Ilan shenif shach uvo peros. If let's say I have a tree and windstorm, strong windstorm, and part of the tree like split. So harehen ketulushin. All the fruits connected to that broken branch are considered detached. No longer connected to the ground. No longer getting nourishment from the ground, considered detached. Yavshu, harehen kemechubarin. If they're dry, they're connected. Now, my love, my solution lechol divrayim, av mechubarin lechol divrayim. So the Gemara says that seems to go against Shmuel, because Shmuel says once they're dried up, in the world of Tumas Ochlin, it's considered detached. And the Braisa makes it sound like they're not considered detached, it's considered attached. The Gemara says, no. What the Braisa simply means is that as long as the fruit is dried up, in certain halachas, i.e. Hilchos Shabbos, it's considered attached. You can't detach it on Shabbos. In the world of Tumas Ochlin, we have a more expansive definition for Tumas Ochlin. As long as it's dried up, we can call it Ochel, even though it's still connected to the plant. Okay, good. Okay, finished off our discussion of our Chetzi Chetzi. Our organic and inorganic chulda, right? And then we went on to discuss more about the different types of shratzim, the land versus the sea, and then a little bit of agarata, dismissing people of Narash and other towns of Bavel. And then we move back to the world of Avraham Adulal, and right now the Avraham Adulal fundamentally is attached to the animal, even though it's hanging on by a thread, or whatever it's hanging on by. It's not Avraham Menachai while it's attached. It's not Basar Menachai while it's attached. But it is subject to Tumas Ochlin. We see that by an animal, and we see that by food as well. If you have a shriveled up fruit connected to a tree, it's still connected. You'll be Mechal Shabbos if you pluck it off. But still, as long as it's dried up, it's subject to Tumas Ochlin. Okay, stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up.